Hi, everybody, and thanks for tuning in to episode 95 of the Run the Hills podcast, sponsored by Charge. Charge have been fueling adventures with real food made with real ingredients since 2012. Go and check them out at www.charge.co.uk. I didn't take a breath, Eddie. I didn't take a breath, and then I projected some spit on my computer screen.
I just had to go silent. It's almost getting so awkward now when you do an introduction. I should perhaps leave the screen.
I should take my heart rate before I have to do a... intro.
Gary has to give himself a little countdown.
Okay, pep talk. How are you doing? I've enjoyed your Instagram, Eddie. Some glorious photographs.
Climb every mountain. Back, Eddie. Guess who's back? Back again. Yes, at last. She's back. She's hobbling, but she's back. Yes, I did it. I did my biggest week. For what, 3 months last week, five biking, and about, I didn't actually have a look in the end, but it was about 40 miles, almost 10,000 feet in the heat wave. Oh, dear Lord above.
What are we looking at? Mid-afternoon, what's it? What's the temp?
When I go and get the kids on the van, it's so funny because dad and I, people probably do that with their dads too. It's like you have the little things that dads love. Dad loves the temperature gauge on the car. And I think I sent one that was like 36.5 at one point.
Oh my goodness. Oh.
And Bryn's car is an old banger and the aircon doesn't work. And he had to drive it back from Geneva. And he was like, I couldn't even touch the steering wheel. It was so hot. And he arrives back like totally ruined. Yeah. And then so I took another picture for my dad later on in the day to go, it's actually getting hotter. It's now like I was going to do the pickup and it was like 8 o'clock at night. And he's like, how have you changed your mileage? Your mileage has totally changed on your van. Oh. I was like, oh, dad, you're so... only dad would scroll in to check. And, like, yeah. And that light bulb was like, it's been on for a while because before I scroll back, it's in December. I was like, dad, it's the car. It's not the van. Don't worry, we're not doing something dodgy. Anyway, yeah, I'm super happy with my progress. Again, like I had a look back at the script last week and I'm not really looking at what I'm doing. I'm just totally going day by feel. Yeah. And I did a 2-hour run I saw last week. And yesterday, totes carried away. We've got a big, it's a 1,000, well, yeah, what was it? I climbed 1,200 meter hill, massive mountain that's just literally behind us that you can ski on in the winter and you can climb up. And I don't often go on it. It's very, it's cliffs, so it's okay. It's not a good dog mountain, basically, but it's an awesome mountain. I've probably climbed it 3 or 4 times since we've lived here. It's a couple of hours up. It's a biggie. So I thought I'll climb up that, then I'll come down and then I'll go up a smaller one to the side of it to sort of get a nice day out. But anyway, we started running and it was so hot that it was like 30-ish degrees in the hills at altitude. I was like, do you know what? I think we're probably better just like power hiking this than trying to just get, as we're going to talk about in a minute, getting just so hot. And there's no water on the mountain either. So we took a couple of bottles and then a bottle in our backpack. Lovely. And then we just took the pressure off and just went lovely. Love a day like that when I don't have anything for a few hours. It's very rare.
Well, that's magic.
And I didn't even think about... So the week before I'd have to have quite a few breaks because the Achilles and the tendons would get tired. And I didn't even think about it.
That's great news.
So the run, which is great. The downhill then is really, we were just talking about what we call technical and non-technical running. And I was like, I count technical running as if you fall, you're in a near death situation. So it's not dangerous. It's not chains, but it's, you know, little ridges, rocks, kind of bum sliding down off bigger rocks off the top. So we decided, I've only got halfway done. So instead of coming back down, we were going to try the path to go up and over and bring it back round. But it was 850 meters down of basically rock hopping. Both of us with my dodgy, we both have my mates with dodgy ankles. It was a bit like, oh, now I've gone over and again. Only went over on it 4 times. But at the top, it was a bit like the ankle is still a bit wobbly. Yeah. And when you're like precariously balanced on one rock, I was like, oh, I didn't breath. But it gets better. And I was super happy. It was such a great, almost 4 hours of like hike, run, chat, snack. Oh, it's my dream. I just love being out like you, Gary, with no jet. Like, actually, I'm not even bothered if I don't run that much. Just being out high.
Being out, yeah.
With all the chuffs going.
Got to stop entering races, Eddie. Then we just go and enjoy these big days.
I loved it. Of course, then I was disgusting. Came home. Oh, Gary, we're having a bit of a nightmare. Middle child's passport we sent in the middle of March.
Okay.
It's still not back. Still not back. We've already had to get one temporary passport when we went back to England, what was it, a couple of months ago? And now, and we're like, oh my gosh. So I did something.
Why is it taking so long?
What the hell? Okay. I did something I've never done before, Gary. I'm not very good at I would prefer not to complain and do anything. Anyway, I fired off 4 emails ticking every box to the complaint passport office. Going, where's the passport? Just tell me where the passport is. Tell me where it is, because what's more, our mates down the road sent theirs off and it came back within 2 weeks. So I'm like, something has happened. What is this passport? Yeah. And you ring the passport office. I'm sure there's people listening that have been in the same boat, because it seems like
I've heard some on the news, actually. I think it is a big problem at the moment.
Yeah, you ring your passport office, you go through all the things, you put in all your numbers, that takes about 10-15 minutes, and then they say, sorry, no one can take your call, and they hang up on you. Anyway, I'd done this long run. I was like, I don't have any calls booked. You know, Monday's quite quiet on my coaching books because most people are having rest days, or, you know, I've checked in with everybody on the Sunday. So, right, I've got a couple of hours that I can sit now and badger the passport office. So sitting in my sweaty running kit, just a load of liquid all around my laptop. So I got onto the web chat as well. Nobody's available to help you. Nobody's available. Kept logging on. No one's
probably got 3 people in the build, isn't there?
So I got through 4th time of trying to get through and getting hung up on. So the rage was building, like, oh, God's sake. Anyway, I've got through to a guy. This is what's happened. Please, can I talk to somebody who can help me? Tell me, when is this passport going to come back? Where is it? Can somebody actually know where this passport is? Because if it's been lost, let's just go and read it. We'll probably be able to do it in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, he's like, I can't help with that. I'll put you through to someone else. I was like, I'm getting somewhere. Oh, Gary, I was so happy because I'm like, okay. You know, got this lady. Okay, she said, it's here. I said, I know it's there. You told me that at the beginning of April. But where is it now? Like I said, we need the passport. We're in France. We can't get these cards the kids need to prove that they live here because we don't have this passport. So we can't travel. I know it seems really bad, but we've got a holiday, but we haven't had a holiday.
Yeah.
We've got this holiday booked and I have to pay a lot of money of the outstanding balance next week.
Yeah.
Potentially, this all sounds so like first world problems. So I was like, we can't go. Okay. But can you just tell me that this passport is being, you know, is there? I can't tell you that. I was like, okay, well, I need to, you know, it's actually a legal document that I need to have for my child. My child can't travel. Please, can you put me through to your supervisor? I don't have a supervisor. What do you mean? You don't have a supervisor? So I was like, I'm sure there's always a way, Gary. There's always a way, isn't there? That when you ring people, then if you keep badgering people, eventually they'll pass on. So I was like, no, you must have a boss. Like, put me through to your boss. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I don't want to get cross with you, but I really have to speak to somebody. Because if this passport is lost, we could still be waiting.
I can't understand how this person can devalue how important the passport is.
Yeah, I got ISTA, of course. I was like, and she's like, she put me on hold. So I was like, she must be talking to her supervisor going, fuck.
She's doing Wordle.
She's like, she must be talking to somebody saying, what shall I do? Like, there's nobody to talk to. I was like, no, there must be somebody. I said, there must be somebody in the whole of UK that can talk to me about where this passport is. Yeah. No, there's nobody. I said, look, I'm really sorry to get more angry, but what am I supposed to do? Do I just sit here for another 3 months with no passport, unable to travel? I was getting more and more angry. She started crying, Gary.
Eddie.
I was like, no. I was like, what is happening here? I was like, look, I'm really sorry to make you so upset, but please just give me a number. Give me somebody I can talk to the passport office. Do you know what she did? She hung up on me.
Oh.
That was the end. I was like, that was an hour and a half of my life and I have still no answer. Where this passport is, nobody can help me, honestly. What? Why? What is happening in this country? Just somebody help me. Anyway, of the four emails I sent of the complaints, it says you'll get a reply. I've not had a reply. Like, it's just a disaster. Anyway,
they're just completely swamped.
Good old, I think so. Good old daddy on the old, who loves the pictures of the, okay, he was like, I'll sort it out for you. He said, where's the passport? I said, I think it's in Durham. He said, I'll drive up. Oh. I said, no, dad loves a call center, a challenge, a refund. I was like, no, dad. Anyway, then 5 minutes later, he'd screenshotted a picture of Durham Cathedral going, I'm almost there. Awesome. I was like, leave it this time. Leave it like a few days. And then he's like, I know that I'll get my MP for Wales on it. I was like, and I've said no, but actually now I'm raging so much that I'm like this. Anyway, there's nothing about running, but it's important to tell everybody life stories of normal life, because it's not all running and sunshine. So,
and if you've got some holiday coming up, make sure you get your passport.
Some holiday coming up, and I can't pat my inflatable unicorn knowing that we might... Bryn just said, should we just leave that one behind? I was like, no, that's the best one. We want to take that one. anyway, running wise, I'm really super happy. I've just been, and then I ran again this morning. I wouldn't have run. I wanted to do a Zwift race, but I'm single parenting again. So got the dogs, got to take out. But no, very little pain. I'm also using, my mate has lent me, she runs this recovery room in Morzine where people can go and do like have massage and everything that you do. And she has these Normatec compression boots.
Oh, I've seen these. Are they any good? Are they all a bit witchcraft?
Amazing, Gary.
Okay.
So she's lent them. You have to use them. Like, so you have to use them. They've made such a difference because I was getting quite a lot of swelling around the Achilles and the tendon every run. We don't really know why. It's just a bit angry still. Yeah. But the compression just takes that swelling down. And if you've only got, I probably sit down for about 40 minutes a day of like Netflix and chill, put these on and it spits out. And
do you know what that is? Netflix and chill. It's a bit rude, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, like every day, you know me, Gary. 40 minutes a day takes the swelling down. Netflix, you don't really want the swelling to go down, I guess, if you're Netflix and chilling. Anyway, I'm so happy about my running. And I started thinking, I was able to watch a bit of the spine footage, which I couldn't have done. I don't think a week ago I'd have been like, I can't. But then I was watching it going, I could see myself back there, see myself like the last month. I think I've been thinking, I don't think I'll ever be able to, you know, I haven't even been able to run up my local.
Yeah.
My local everyday climbs. And this morning I ran up it just listening to a podcast and I was like, progress.
You get there.
I know lots of people have messaged like on Facebook and stuff with Achilles problems and stuff. So it has been a long time, but stick to your Alfredson protocol, stick with your strength and take it slow and you will get there. And I'm thinking of you all. So yeah. Oh, good in the hood. Right. We're going to move on to you, Gary, because I've gone on about this passport. But I've had quite a few messages saying, look, the only thing we're really interested in is the drone story.
Oh, right. You've been getting these messages, not me.
Can you ask Gary what happened about the drone? All my mates, I was just saying to you before, like mates message me, say hi to Gary. I'm like, oh, hello.
I can't remember where we left off, part one. What was
they were going to send it back to you.
I went to them. I went to pick it up on whatever night it was last week. And so I've got the drone back, but it is completely destroyed. Two police officers in the Wickham area of... Gateshead. Imagine if there was like dodgy stuff on there and like I lost it, and the people that found it were police officers who actually know how to access drone footage. So it would be like, oh God. Luckily, just me messing around in Dalton Park on Crimden Beach with the drone. So yeah, I got it back, which is awesome. And I managed to salvage the memory card, but that is it. Something about salt water and electrics is not a good combination. And any moving part, I just fused. So it was all just locked up. But luckily, DJI sent me a new one out. So I've got a new drone.
What a happy ending.
It did cost me a bit of money, but my goodness me, thank goodness I insured. If anybody's getting a drone, insure your bloody drone. You know, I wouldn't say it's not going to happen again, because to get these cool shots, you got to go and...
You've got to be a risk taker with your drone, man. You can't just keep it inside.
So watch this space.
It maybe just a little bit of practice. Maybe.
Yeah, that's what Neil said. Gary, just go on the back field and play around with it. Don't just take it straight to the cliffs. So yes, we have a new drone. I'm just anxious to get over, get somewhere and get out, get playing with it again. So yeah, but thanks. Yeah, thanks everybody. I did have a chat with a few people when I was at Durham Dales and the drone came up a few times. It was quite good. But my week, what have I done? Well, Father's Day, first of all, that was awesome.
Of course, happy Father's Day.
My two children really spoiled me that day. I took Rex out, which was nice. Always good to start the day. Came back to homemade waffles. What's your waffle top? What's your waffle topping?
A waffle maker.
Yeah, it's like a Breville, but yeah. You can take them out and you put waffle irons in there too. Oh, it's really good. But what's your go-to waffle topping?
It would be probably, I'll tell you what it'd be. Greek natural yogurt.
Yeah, I'm there. Go on.
Blueberries.
Oh, my goodness, Eddie.
Pumpkin skeids, honey.
Yeah.
Oh,
I see. I'll do that. Yogurt, berries, seeds, granola.
Yeah.
A bit of granola and a bit of honey.
Yeah. A bit of crunch.
Yeah, I like a bit of crunch. So that was lovely. And then what do we do? Just chilled out. Yeah, it was really nice. My son kept making me coffee, so that was awesome. Training-wise, it was... I did two quality sessions, but they were quite reduced because of Durham Dales. So instead, it was like only like a 10-minute threshold run and then 5x1K. So it wasn't like the big 10-minute and then the 1K sandwiches. It was just the 1K. So that was good. And I've also been doing my strength and conditioning. I think I mentioned before, I've tried to add some hamstring exercises.
Okay.
So that's been good.
What are we adding? You know what you need to do?
Well, they're like, the three things I want to do. One is the Nordic crunch. You're kind of on your knees really, but with your ankles under
and
something.
Then you go forward.
Yeah. Oh wow. Have you
that's like the advanced hamstring exercise. You can go a little bit easier than that.
Well, I'm doing a hamstring curl, like the reverse hamstring curl. So with bands. So I'm like standing up against the wall, I suppose, then band and then lifting my leg up. And then I can't remember what it's called. Is it like you're on one leg, you balance, and then you pivot at the hip and pick a weight up if you want.
Yeah,
and your leg straight out the back.
Yeah,
so
perfect.
Doing a couple, because I thought that was two different ways of moving the hamstring. One was like a curl on the so it's concentric. And then I suppose the Nordic one is the other way. When I can actually do that. I need somebody with me to do that because
You need George to sit on the sofa. That's a tricky one to do. Tout seul, isn't it? Glute bridges.
I do. Yeah. On my leg routine, I'll do the glute bridges. I'll do lots of
glute bridges, glute marches, Romanian deadlifts, single leg Romanian deadlifts, Nordic curl. I think that's everything that I give for hamstring. We should all be doing that.
When I do the single leg stuff, my left hamstring, which is where all the problem is, I get an achy left back, an achy glute, and that's from my knee, if I'm feeling issues with that. It's all down the left-hand side, and the level of balance on my left-hand side is not as good as that. Even if I'm brushing my teeth at night, I'll do the minute on each leg, and I've been doing this for about 7 years, Lisa, and I still can't even do a minute on each leg. I'm terrible.
I understand how, like, I'm like, when does it even up? Like, why is it, like, terrible on one side? Maybe we're just born like that. I need to test the kids, actually.
Yeah.
Use them as an experiment and see how wobbly they are. If they're more wobbly on one side.
So when it's the leg workout, that's a leg workout. But on the upper body and the core, I'm just doing like 5-10 minutes of that at the end. So I didn't want to add anything extra because then that would just be something extra. I thought if I made the sessions I'm doing already 5 or 10 minutes longer, then there's more chance of me doing it. So, and that was that. I had a bit of a whinge. Do you ever find this? Dog owners in denial about their dog behavior.
Oh, yes, that's me.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where to put it. Where was it? I was running with Rex, and I know Rex is hot and cold with other dogs. He's really good with people. There's no issues. But some dogs, he literally loves them, and some dogs, he wants to kill them.
It's like
he's on a lead. You know, I understand this. And I've not trained him, so he's on a lead. And there's twice I've met this guy, and his dog is all over Rex, quite aggressively.
Oh,
he's like reacting as if like, oh, he's never done that before.
And you're like,
he did. Last time I saw you, he did exactly the same thing. I'm just like, it's not dogs. I've not got an issue with dogs.
It's scary if he's attached, if he's on like a wasted lee as well to you.
Oh, yeah, I've got to get in between these dogs.
Lord.
It's quite scary. It's been a couple of times, actually. Our German Shepherd bit me once, which wasn't great.
When I see other dogs coming, like, because where we live, it's the same dogs. You know where all the dogs, probably the same with you. Like, it's the same dog. You see the same dogs and you know the dogs that you're like, ooh. Their dog is on the lead. I put my dogs on the lead. And like, well, you know, because often if people put their dogs on the lead, it means their dog does not want to say hello. If their dogs are off the lead, it's a kind of like, but nearly was, I'm running, so we move quite fast.
Yeah.
Lindy and Taki, and Taki's got a bit grumpy in her old age. If a dog, she doesn't like a dog, especially, well, I kind of feel that sometimes in the holidays when tourists come and they bring these tiny little dogs that they pick up. When we see when our dogs are coming, and I'm like, no.
I'd love a dog I could pick up.
And then they like hold them up, and I'm like, oh my God, that's like a free bait for Lindy and Taki to go, oh, what? Jump there. Had a few incidents like that. Also, sometimes I'm not expecting them. And then, anyway, my dogs are very friendly. They're not aggressive, but if they see another runner coming, they're like, somebody, hi. And I try and get, they're quite good. The recall's good, occasionally not so great if I'm not expecting it or I'm listening to my music too loud. So I wouldn't say my dogs are perfect, but they're not aggressive. Lindy will overgreet everybody, but she's kind of really cute. So most people are like, oh, hi, cute dog. We're very dog.
Don't mind that. It's just the denial. It was like, oh.
Yeah, and then I say, I'm really sorry if the people I should do more training with the dogs, but I'm also like, kind of like them being a bit feral.
Yeah, I'm not a dog. I don't think Rex is not going to be trained. It's not pretty good, but I could do better. But then what else did we do? Red Durham Dales, actually. Yeah, race.
Oh, sorry. Yes, of course. Tell us all.
But good, actually. Yeah, I stayed with Neil all the way, so that was good. We reunited for 5 hours on the...
We're reunited.
Yeah, on the trails. I enjoyed it. It was my slowest Durham Dales that I've ever done, I think.
How many times have you done it?
It's either 3 or 4. I'm not 100% sure, actually, because it was literally no one's done it for about 3 years. So,
okay.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the slowest one, but it was not about that. You know, there's no point in racing. And then the goal is to have a good run out and then run again on Sunday. And what I'll go on to the negatives soon, but the positives are I tired on Sunday, obviously, you got a big day out, but I had no DOMS again, which was a big fear going into the late 100. That was the thing that got me. I kind of got event DOMS, really, I suppose, from after Mardale onwards. I had so much discomfort in my quads that I really found it hard to do anything other than a walk. So again, I was quite pleased that I've had a good day out and on literally zero. I was fatigued, but no DOMS. And I think I did about 6 or 7 miles with Rex, nice and easy miles. But yeah, I had this sub 24 hour goal, which I just plucked out. There's no why to it apart from just I want a sub 24 hour.
That's cool. Chick sticks.
Yeah. So I'm just, based on Swaledale and Durham Dales, I'm just a little bit unsure if it's a bit beyond me at the moment. We'll see come in the sub cup that's where, and the reason why both of those races, if I kept that level of effort, then I really think I couldn't sustain that level of effort for one. And Durham Dales at the end of it, I got myself, it wasn't really particularly hard effort as such. Again, I wouldn't have done that for 100 miles, no way, but got myself severely dehydrated, which I didn't really think I was at the time. And then I had a bit of blood in my way afterwards. So I'm thinking, well, I'm, you know, not really firing on cylinders in that Durham Dales. And I've come out of a 30-mile race weighing blood. How am I going to fare on the Lakeland 100, which could be another roasting hot day? So I'm a bit,
drinking, are you practicing your race fueling and hydration?
Oh, well, that was, yeah, obviously.
Obviously not, you're so dehydrated, which is
Before I started, I had a big, must have been nearly 2 litres of the Precision Hydration, the 1500. So that was before I'd even started. Then I had a litre of drink on me. And then when I got to Middleton Teasdale, I was going to top up again. But I had normally I've said loads of times in this podcast, I wee every 5 minutes. I had one wee in the first 15 miles. And it wasn't the best of colours. But I just thought, okay. Stupidly, I kind of thought, well, it's quite nice. I'm not stopping for a wee every 5 minutes. But then obviously that wasn't a good sign. And then, yeah, I did kind of rehydrate more than I'd planned to the second half. But again, I wasn't weeing much. Maybe had one or two the second half. And I wasn't really aware I was overly dehydrated, to be honest, until I got to the end and I went to the toilet and it was like, oh, it was like you drank the beetroot shots. So I'm a bit worried that at that level of effort on that weather combination that my body really didn't cope that well. How's that going to pan out on the Lake 100?
Be super on top of your nutrition and your hydration. And if it is super hot, you're going to have to just slow down, Gary.
Yeah. It's so easy to talk about like, oh, this is good. I've done this race. I've done sub-3, whatever. And when things are going well, but it is it was an eye opener for me that happened kind of blood in my ear. And I've never had that in the past. So yeah, got to keep an eye on that.
I've had it low. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Well, I Googled it immediately and I was like, oh my goodness. But as soon as I could get Wi-Fi, I was like, shit, what is going on? And luckily,
It's really common in running. It can be impact.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
It can be, dehydration. It can be a bladder infection. It can be all sorts of, I mean, obviously, it's a big warning sign that you need to seek medical attention. But
I wonder if it was a whole, because also poor Neil was downwind of me for about 3 hours of the race. And I'm not too sure if it was the heat. Anytime I ate any, I had some cheese charged flapjack and I had Kendall mint cake, and the Kendall mint cake, which is pretty much raw sugar, that really just sent my tummy into turmoil. And yeah, Neil was getting it for about three hours. So I'm not too sure if it was like everything. It was just, nothing was quite right there. Go again, St. Cuthbert's, and I've really got to be mindful. I'm not too sure I'm going to do this because it's not the same elevation, the distance profile as the Lake 100. So it's quite tricky to replicate that. But I really want to rein it in the effort just to see what that does. As far as what time I come in, you know, if the pace is, I think the Lake 100 for 24-hour pace is 13.5-minute miling average over the whole course. So maybe then on St. Cuthbert's Way, say 12.5-minute miling will be equivalent effort.
You can work that like with the feet meters climbed per mile on St. Cuthbert's Way, you can work that out. Whenever clients do that, I'm like, can you work that out for me?
Because I don't do any of that. Keep the effort down a little bit, rein that in a bit, and hopefully just see how that pans out over the 45 miles. You know, 45 miles is still a decent distance. So if I get in the Lake 100, I'll kind of compare that to say maybe getting to Dalmain, roughly halfway there. And if I'm feeling like I could kind of keep going on to what's the Holy Island, then I'll feel a lot better. But currently, sub-24, I'm not too sure. We'll see.
We had some people running sub-24 on the West Highland Way. We call it the Ultra West Highland Way because we're talking to the Ultra guy next week. So let's give him a shout out before we start. I had a couple of clients doing this. Nicola Dawson, she put on our Facebook page, and she had a good race, the first 100 miles. So she finished, she was super happy. Tough last bit, which is often the case in the first 100 mile.
Yeah.
Way before it.
It's a fast one, isn't it? So it's so different to see something like the Lake 100,
especially the elevation. It's a mixture. It's a real mixture, that West Highland Way. And the crewing and everything, it's quite logistical planning. You can't just turn up as you can with some other 100 milers. Rowan Boswood won it in 15 hours, 9 minutes, first finished up. Whew. Fast. And Lynn Allen with a PB of 18.46, 19th place overall. I think it was hot. Well done everyone who did West Highland.
Midges.
Let's not.
It's been good over the weekend watching the Spine Challenger unfold. And also, as we speak, the Summer Spine is going on, so we can't give any results for the Summer Spine. That'll be next week. But yeah, in the Spine Challenger, Lauren Johnson took the win for the ladies in 30 hours, 4 minutes, 31 seconds. And it was great to see Emma Roper, previous guest on the show, came in third. And another previous guest, too, Hannah Basley, completed the race too. Awesome going, everybody. And I'm not too sure if I mentioned it, but did I tell you I helped on Jo Meek on her Bob Graham round?
Jo Meek, the international GB trail runner. Scott Crawford.
That's the one. Well, Tom Piggott.
Did you bother her or did you help her?
I don't bother anybody. But yeah, Tom Piggott. It's good. When I saw he'd won the race, my spidey senses went, I thought, oh, goodness me, I recognise that name. And last time I saw Tim, was. Oh, I should start that again.
No, I love it.
Okay. And last Tim time was
Tim, not
was
Tom.
That Wasdale Head, and he literally had run leg one, two, and three with Jaw on her Bob Graham round. The last time I saw him, he was actually, he's a, I'm pretty sure he's a physio. That's his day job, and he was given Jaw some treatment before she set off on leg
what four, after so. Doing leg one, two and three.
Yeah And I think that was his last total different terrain, you know, that leg one, two, three of the Bob Graham, it was probably maybe his last big day out before the spine challenger. But yeah, 23 hours and 6 minutes and 47 seconds. Well done, Tim.
Record-breaking, both record-breaking challenger times, weren't they? Course records, I think.
Oh, awesome. Another shoe or a kit show this week, Eddie. I do like these ones. Lee and Bordale from Innovate joined us for a chat about some shoes from the Innovate range, and they came to us live from there. Is it the Hub or the Forge or whatever it is over in Staveley? But they've got a lovely...
Cool place.
Oh, yeah. I've drove past it a few times and I just think I need to
you need to pop in and knock on the door and say, it's Gary. It's Gary
from the podcast. But yeah, it was awesome. And I learned a few things from our chat. So yeah, hope you do too.
Hi, Badil, to the show. How are you? Where are you? And have you both been for a run today?
Hi, yeah. No, I haven't been for a run today. I'm actually just back up from a holiday with a family holiday in Mallorca. So I literally unpacked
and
last
the
night.
Slight tan, I thought. Yeah. Like, gosh, this is Lake District Fells.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in Staveley in the Lake District in our HQ office. You in for run today?
I've got my stuff for a lunch.
Oh, a lunch break. I bet if they are like, take an extra long lunch break, get out for your run.
Yeah, that's definitely company policy. We get an extra long lunch break so that we get to go for a run. I can't really remember last time I've been head torch running during the week.
When the shoes need testing as well, it's always like, right, who wants to go for a run and stuff? So it's, yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's not a job.
That'll be awesome, wouldn't it?
Gary's licking his lips going, I could move there. I could move the family.
Yeah. Well, I keep, when I drive the lakes, there's quite a few times I'll drive past the sign for your Innovate Centre and, you know, I'm guilty. I've not took a right-hand turn and headed up there. I should do one day. It looks awesome. It's like a shipping containers. And is that right?
Well, it's our headquarters is on the Mill Yard in Staveley. So it's a really like popular, it's a huge car park for a start, but then you've got lots of businesses built in within this old Mill Yard. So there's ourselves, some other running and outdoors brands are here, as well as Wheelbase, which is the UK's largest cycling store, and Artisan Bakeries, Hawkshead Brewery next door, which is...
need to leave.
It's tempting not to stray into there every evening when you leave work. Yeah, it's a fantastic place, and we've got amazing trails and fells out the back door. So it is literally, I know it might sound cheesy, but it is true. We all have our running shoes here. They're all at the door and we all run.
So is it a place where people can come and try shoes? Is it a shop as well? Sorry for my ignorance.
We have an office. So our head office is here. And about a year ago this month, actually, we opened a store next door, and it's called The Forge, because we were forged in the fells, as you can see in the writing above. So it's called The Forge, and that's in Staveley. And we have all our full ranges in there. It's like a brand store, basically. It's really a nice place to come and check out Innovate stuff, have a chat to people. We have some, we've set up some routes from the store as well. So you can, for a £1 donation to Martin Rescue, you get a map, and it's got controls all around the hills and trails here. And you can go for either 2, 3, I think it's 4 or 6 hours. And it's all virtual.
You're going to say just miles.
and it's all done off your phone. You download an app. And when you get to certain checkpoints, your phone pings, tells you you've got it. You get those points. You move on to the next one. Awesome. And it's really cool. So we've had lots of people come in and try and see. It's virtual orienteering. Hugely popular.
That's cool. And a really good thing to hear, because I know loads of people struggle, especially in the last year as well, when people's activity levels have changed, finding a trainer that fits. They order endless ones off the internet, and then as soon as you wear them outside, you can't return them, and you're not sure what trainer's right for what, and different companies bringing out an array of trainers. So to be able to actually go somewhere, try someone on, and speak to somebody that hasn't just, you know, come out of school and is working at a Saturday job, a trainer shop, but is actually like passionate and knows every detail and isn't going to let you walk out of that shop with a shoe that's not right for you, is worth the trip, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, only experienced staff who work in there, runners. And like I say, we're next door. So we've got a team of, when we're all in, there's probably 20 odd people in the office. Yeah. And, you know, majority of them are runners who've got vast array of experience over various terrains, races. So yeah, we're more than happy to help people find the right shoe for their feet.
How long has it been open for now?
A year this month.
Oh, that's quite brave in the pandemic to open up.
It was very brave. It's the first one we've ever done. Obviously, we're in many, many retail shops, throughout the UK. But it's the first time we've opened our own brand store. So it's just obviously purely Innovate stuff. But it's been more successful than we thought it would be. So we're really happy with how the first year's gone.
Brilliant. Could we talk about the, I've seen it quite a lot on social media, the new Parklaw shoe that really looks exciting. It seems a bit of a hybrid shoe, if I'm right, like from a road to trail. It's not just an outright road shoe or a trail shoe. I saw the pictures of it and I thought, I really like the look of that.
I'll let Bodil talk you through it. But yeah, basically, you're right on the money there. It's a road to trail shoe. Obviously, across that, we've got a large range of shoes which cover various terrains, from, you know, your soft muddy ground through to your hard rocky trails. And then even within those, we break it down a little bit further to really get quite specific as to what you're looking for. Yeah. And then you've got things like fits and weights. But this shoe, we have done it before, but it's the first time the first time we've really, you might say, you know, marketed it. Road to trail, the idea of having a shoe for adventure from the door, where you feel like, you know, you've got a lot of shoes, you can't decide what to do. I'm going to run some road, then I'm going to hit the trails.
Yeah.
Don't know what I want. This is the shoe. This is a shoe for that road to trail progression. Yeah, but I mean, Bodil will tell you much more about it.
So I think what was really unique about this shoe is actually that we designed the outsole to be like that best of both worlds.
Okay.
So most road running shoes and trail running shoes, they have different like qualities, but they're actually not necessarily conflicting. So on trails, obviously you want cleats and some grip.
Yeah.
And what our designer has done here is that he's done just under 198 actually of like small cleats that give you a really balanced and smooth ride. If you have only a couple of cleats, it doesn't feel as like smooth when you're going transitioning for your gait.
Yeah.
So that gives you both grip but also like comfort on the trails. And then when you go into the midsole, we've done an 8mm drop, because on the road you often want a little bit more than on really technical terrain, but still 8mm is not a lot for a road shoe. So it's kind of like, again, a balance between road and trail. And then in the materials, we've put the new G-Fly material in the midsole, and we made it slightly softer, because like road running shoes, you often want quite a comfy feel because you're on like a really hard surface, but you still want it to be stable when you're on trails. So again, like nice balance. By the way, outsole also graphene grip means that it doesn't wear too down too quickly on tarmac. You still have
because that's what I was thinking. Was like, I've had these hybrid shoes before, and if you run, you know, any sort of distance on the road, that grip goes very quickly.
Yes. So that's also why we have so many cleats. It will distribute the pressure better, and then the graphene makes the rubber more long lasting as well.
And what's that? There's a channel that runs down the middle there. What is that for?
So basically you can see the midsole on there, and it gives you like a good transition. So this is basically, if you're heel striker, that would be where you're first hitting.
Yeah.
And it just helps you transition to your forefoot.
Yeah.
There's also a flex goes across the other way, isn't there?
Also, I think you can just about see it.
Yeah, I see it. Cool.
That's like the Metaflex, and it means that if I take the shoe stuffer out, that when you're actually flexing your shoe, you always want it to flex there because that's where your foot can flex. You don't want it to flex there. So that's why we put like a slight groove in the sole to make sure that your shoe will flex where your foot will flex as well. Yeah. All of our shoes are kind of designed with that philosophy in mind, so that it works the same as your foot will want to work. So it doesn't tell your foot move like this, but yeah, your foot tells the shoe, I want to move like this. So it's kind of like natural performance, I would say. So it's not barefoot, it's just natural in terms of how it works.
What's the ankle like? It looks quite solid in your hand, the sort of ankle part of the trainer. Yeah.
We always do soft ankles.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So we kind of do that because otherwise you might get quite a lot of aggravation in your Achilles. I know some people who might have found Innovate like years and years ago, and they're like, I can only wear your trainers because otherwise I get Achilles tendon like inflamed. So actually, like you say, it looks solid.
Yeah, it does. Don't get me wrong,
but it's still soft and it won't give you any blisters because it's not forcing your ankle in a certain way. You can just run the way that your body wants to run.
And you see that with like a softer sole than maybe on the 300s, you'd notice that.
I think you do. It's just kind of like to give that extra sort of comfort on you if you're on really hard packed trails.
You've done the West Highland Way, haven't you, Badil? A good shoe for that sort of flat pack trail where you're also looking for some grip at some point.
Yes. I think I would be really struggling to decide between these two. There's not that much road in...
That's the Trailfly G300 Max.
So because West Highland Way depends on how many days you would do it, but I kind of ran about 50K a day, so about 30 miles a day, which then means I would probably go for a Trailfly Ultra Max because it's just got that a little bit more cushioning. And I found that there wasn't that much road on the trail. Yeah. So that would be perfect for me. This one is actually what I would take if I'm going on holiday, because I will probably be running from my apartment on the tarmac, trying to find some trails, do a lot of like traveling for work as well. Again, from your hotel, going running somewhere, trying to find some mountains and hills, and this would be the perfect shoe, and it looks good too.
That's
such a good way to advertise something, because going on holiday, especially now EasyJet are charging you to check in a bag. I'm outraged about that. I'm like, yeah, but I need 3 pairs of trainers. But to be able to just take one where you know, because it's a silly thing, it's a first world problem, isn't it? That if lots of people that do travel and want to carry on training, but they don't know what terrain they're going to be on, but if they've got something that they can use for both, is a big... it makes the investment a little bit more worthwhile.
Didn't I take my trail flies to Scotland and try to run up Arthur's Seat in them? These would have been ideal.
What, you took your Nike Vapor Zooms to Scotland and went up Arthur's Seat.
Very bad mistake. I think it's awesome. You know, my day consists of maybe half a mile of tarmac, and then depending on the run I choose to go to work, it's on trail and then back on tarmac again. And also depending on the weather, a lot of the time a road shoe will be fine. But if it's been raining, for example, then my trails are not so good for a road shoe. So that sounds like an awesome, like you say, go-to shoe. What we're looking at weight-wise on that?
This one is a size 8 and a half, in around a size 8 and a half, about 280 grams.
Okay, so a little bit lighter.
Is there a difference between a male model and a female model?
So at the moment... what we do with our fits is actually we offer different fits in different shoes. So if you go on our website, you can see a fit scale from 1 to 5, five being the widest, 1 being the narrowest. And if you want to buy a men's shoe, it'd be the same as a women's shoe in the same size. And the reason why we do that is because actually men and women both can have narrow or wide feet. And I spoke at length with podiatrists about this, but actually, if you look at the sort of normal distribution of everyone's feet, it would the normal brands would actually say women's feet are narrower, men's feet are wider. And I think some women buy the men's shoes because they're wider. No, you can just buy the women's shoes to make sure you get a fit 4 or 5, because that's quite on the wide scale. And you can just get the color you actually like.
I never even think about the color of a trainer. It has no, because it's just going to be covered in mud anyway.
Well, we get, it's probably one of the hottest topics in our office, on our social media. We launch a new shoe, and yeah, I mean, we please a lot of people, but we, there's also, you know, we don't, can't please everybody, unfortunately.
It's a vibrant yellow, that Art Claw. You've gone big. You're not, you're gonna, people are gonna love it. Or it's a bit of a Marmite color, isn't it?
This has been very, very popular at launch. We've got a couple of other colors.
That's the best selling color so far.
That's
another one, isn't it? That was another launch. And we also have a blue teal, and we also have a black white. I haven't got it with me. And so, I mean, we only launched it. Seventh of April. It's really fresh and selling really well to start with. And got a nice campaign around it. So it's our first running shoe launch of the year as well. So we're really pleased with how it's going.
A lot of chats here, maybe about, see if there's a race like a Lakeland 100 coming up, and the shoe choice chatter before that just goes off the chart.
It gives me anxiety just looking at the chatter of people like 2 weeks ago still haven't decided their trainer choice.
Same in the office. We have the same conversations.
Yes.
and often not everybody wears the same shoes. So,
well, I'm still just, I'm fortunate enough, I did the Bob Graham round last year. And I bought so many shoes in the build up to the Bob Graham round for every possible weather scenario. And I think I'm still just opening the boxes now this year, going through them. But yeah, if we're going to go back to the Lakeland 100 or something like that, that kind of classic Lakeland event where, you know, it's quite a hard packed trail for a lot of it, but there are some sections, if the weather's not been great, where you're going to be slipping and sliding. I suppose I'm blanking on the name. There's a section as you're going into Braithwaite. I just remember, I said, Buttermere to Braithwaite. And that can be quite slippery. I've chatted with Eddie quite often. There's never one shoe that would do every scenario. There's always going to be a compromise. But from your point of view, from the like Innovate range, asking for a friend, what would be a good Lakeland 100 shoe?
Have you done Lakeland 50 or Lakeland
100? I haven't, but I did the Lakes Traverse a couple of weeks ago, I had the same kind of like issue as like Lake District. It gets really rocky and steep near the end. Like scrambly almost. And there's plenty of like muddy sections too. But then in the start, it's pretty smooth and flat.
Yeah.
So I think it was only like 30K in before you hit your first hill. And I ended up going for the Trailfly Ultra Max actually. And that is because even though it only has 4 millimeter cleats, I say only like for Innovate, that's maybe fairly shallow, but for other brands, that's all they do ever. I found that, you know, these grooves here, they give me extra grip on the mud because they make the cleats actually deeper than they are. So I find that this actually grips surprisingly well in the mud, more so than how we designed it, I would say. And what I really like about this is if I go on uneven terrain, you know, like all of those rocks and stuff, these flex grooves mean that the shoe adapts and molds to the terrain.
Yeah.
And I find that I can still go over all this like rough stuff.
Interesting.
Even with like a cushioned shoe. And also because they're really wide fit, I've got duck feet. I mean, I have to kind of,
all the best,
you know, like, and you're going for a long time, your feet are going to swell. So you want something really, really wide.
You're holding up? What's that shoe you're holding up? Sorry, I didn't hear you when you said at the beginning.
It is the Trailfly Ultra G300.
Trailfly Ultra.
So if I interject slightly, there's almost like two options really. That's one option. And then this, there's a reason this is a really muddy shoe. I'll explain that in a minute. So this is the right way. There you go. That's the other option. So this is the...
That's the one I've got here, is it?
Yes, that's right. So it was called the Terra Ultra G270, and we recently renamed it the Trailfly G270. So these two, obviously, these are our two Trailfly shoes.
Okay.
So this one obviously has got a deeper cushioning, more drop. It's got a bit more comfort under your feet.
What's the drop on that one, Lee?
6 millimeters.
Six, because this one's zero, isn't it?
That's zero. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a bit more of a robust, a bit more stable shoe. You know, it's for real long distances. And then you've got, this is like almost like the stripped down speedier version of it. So, and the reason this is dirty is because this is actually Damien Hall's shoe. I'm sure you
know.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, yeah, I've seen Damien Hall crushing it in those shoes.
Yeah. So this is a shoe he wore to run the course to course. So from St. Bees to Robin Hood's Bay, 185 miles. Yeah. And he's actually wrote his time and stuff on the shoe.
Oh, what a show off.
What I'm trying to say is that this is another option. If this is a really popular shoe, zero drop. So your foot feels quite close to the ground, but it feels really fast, and it's got plenty of protection with a nice springy midsole in it, and an incredible, this outsole is incredibly grippy. Yeah. But it just depends if you want, how you want to feel within a shoe. This is your sort of your more lower to the ground, your faster feel, whereas this is a bit further off the ground, a bit more supportive, a bit more comfort underfoot.
Yeah.
Those will be the two options. Like that's no, not that. True. That's not true.
We've heard that before.
Is there any, Badil, you might be able to answer this. Is there anything about when I wore this shoe that you kindly sent to me, I felt that my foot was having to work a lot harder. I normally wear a more cushioned shoe with a bigger drop. Mm-hmm. I felt my foot was actually, had got a bit lazy and it wasn't used to working as hard. Would you say that you need, your foot strength is quite important to be able to wear a shoe like that with zero drop? And if you haven't got strong feet, you should work on your foot strength, basically.
So... Yes.
Yeah.
If you've always wore protective shoes, lots of cushioning and lots of drop,
talking about another brand we know dearly that provide a lot of cushioning that people love because they're so comfortable, but I wonder if their foot becomes, Harry, I'm allowed to say that, aren't I? Their foot becomes a bit lazy in them sometimes because the innovate. Yeah. Sort of because of this twisting motion that the trainer allows you to do, your foot in a more cushioned shoe, your foot doesn't naturally do that over every single bit of terrain, does it?
Yeah. So your foot is really, really amazing. I think it's got 26 bones and like 35 different joints. And it is really optimally adapting to all these different terrains and to propel you forward. And actually, you do want to train your feet. You want them to be strong and then you want them to keep you injury free. And for me, there's sometimes a difference between, you know, on my everyday run, I would want to do that training on my feet. And if I'm doing my ultra long challenge, then maybe I want a little bit more protection. And, you know, in our range, we have different shoes for that. There's lots of personal preference as well. Some people just always have had strong feet and can probably run a coast to coast in less protection. That really, really depends. But I would say that if you want to work on your, you know, long-term injury prevention, then make sure that you're strong. It's really, really important.
There's a lot of shoes in the market which are very, and probably might come onto carbon plates, I guess, but you know, that are very stiff and they don't really work with the foot as it was intended. Whereas, you know, you pick up a pair of Innovate shoes and you say that, you know, flexible, light, natural, not barefoot, but, you know, a natural performance element to it. And, you know, that is our philosophy. That's our idea. It's not to restrict the foot.
Well, yeah, the first thing I would do is when I go and look, when I used to go to shoe shops before I lived in the middle of nowhere, was I used to bend the shoe, check the shoe did that. And then I used to check. So I'm bending it in half and then I used to press down the heel. And if it didn't do that, I mean, obviously with a new shoe, there's slightly less, then I would be very cautious about putting it on my foot or even my kids' feet as well. That without that natural bit of movement. And I just thought from wearing that, I realized how lazy my feet had got from wearing, going for comfort over a slightly better grip.
The 270, it's an awesome shoe, I've got to say. I think I'm on my third pair of them now, out of the box, laced up, and off you go. And I like that zero drop. I feel really, it was immediate. I just felt like I had some, my legs were turning over faster. I just had a bit of zip. The 270 felt really like, I'm only a 6.5, so probably I'm not too sure they might even weigh slightly less than 270 grams. Yeah, I think it's an awesome shoe. Third pair, would I wear them on the Lakeland 100 though? That's, I'm just thinking that last 80 miles when everything's aching. Yeah. Would
I think there's another option as well, which, but this would depend on the weather, but you will see people wearing this for Lakeland 50, Lakeland 100, and yeah, things like Bob Graham rounds, well, especially this shoe.
So, oh, the X-Talon, yeah.
So this is the new Cross Talon Ultra. So it's, again, it's designed with distance in mind. So it's got a nice wide toe box. It's got a PowerFlow midsole with nice spongy in there. Gives you lots of kick as well and response as you go through your gait. But obviously the big difference is that it's got the, you see that?
8 millimeter.
Like 7 or 8, isn't it? Yeah, wow.
Yeah, so those are like real mud gripping lugs.
So obviously if you're going to be doing something like Lakeland 100, Lakeland 50 on the weather's pretty rough, and it's going to be a bit slippery and a bit boggy, then, you know, this is a great option because it's still, I've done loads of running this shoe now, and it still rides. It's surprising people as to how nice it rides on harder trails, even, you know, sections of road as well. You know, people used to talk about wearing like running shoes that were like football boots, and you used to run down the road and be like clatter, 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 clatter.
Yeah.
You know, the shoes aren't designed like that anymore. They're designed in a way that they can be versatile because, you know, it's pretty rare that unless you go in and setting off and doing a really specific 5 mile boggy, muddy run, then you know exactly what you want. I think it comes back to what we discussed before. You want your shoes to be versatile and to tick quite a few boxes, and, you know, something we try and do with ours.
Would you say that one is a good one, Lee, for a sort of spine on the Pennine Way?
So, yeah, well, Damien wore these to, I know he didn't finish, we was in the lead, but he didn't finish the spine race this year. Unfortunately, he got a long way before a few issues, but he was wearing, this was his shoe of choice for that. It's just, yeah, it's a great all-round shoe for anything for long distances when you might be encountering some softer, muddy ground.
Softer. So, what's the drop on that one, Lee?
8 mil.
Bordeaux's better than me on all these things.
So 8 mil. Okay, so that's a great option for the longer. Yeah, I'd be nervous to wear a zero drop for an ultra for anything longer than.
I'd probably use those more. Like, I've got some mud claws, and they only sit in the cupboard until I know I'm going to need these today. But I can see probably those Cross Talon there. I think I probably would take them with me more.
Gary was hoping that you were going to be bringing out a carbon range in the debate because he's always looking at ways to skive off training and get free speed.
Free speed.
Free speed. Yeah, I do love a carbon shoe.
Who is it? Who is it that's just bringing out a carbon trail? Is it Salomon have just brought out something?
North Face.
North Face just brought out something with a bit of carbon in. I personally can't imagine anything worse than running. I do have a carbon plated road shoe, well, with a bit of carbon in. I'm not sure. It's not a supersonic one. And it is not lovely to run on the road, especially as I only run on the road about once a year. But it is lovely to feel that ping back in the legs. But I can't imagine anything worse than being on the trails with that hard sole underneath your foot.
You very rarely, you'll know more about this than me, obviously. But you never plant your, like on the road, it's easy. You manage the where you plant your feet down is pretty similar every time. But the trail, it's different. So I'm not really sure how a carbon plated shoe would fit in that environment.
The thing with the carbon plates as well is like they are really tuned to exactly your body weight and how you land and the hardness of the terrain underneath. And if you get your timing wrong on the carbon plates, they're not helping. I mean, it will just be a good midsole material that gives you the springy feel then.
Yeah.
So if you're going to look at trail running, I think you will be changing your cadence. Anyone who's trying to run to a certain cadence on trails is like, oh dear, it's going all out the window, isn't it? So like, it won't help you that much. And at the same time, we were talking earlier about how your shoes need to be flexible in order to help your feet stay healthy and injury-free long-term. And with a carbon plate, you will automatically have a very stiff shoe, which kind of goes against our philosophy.
Yeah.
On top of that, I also know that like carbon is actually quite unsustainable. So you're putting something inside a shoe that doesn't really degrade. I mean, carbon bikes is like one of the worst things for the environment. I know that they're really, really light. Goodness. They're not very durable in terms of like compared to the other materials. And so is another reason not to do it.
You look at these carbon super-powered road shoes, that they call them. They don't last very long either, do they?
No.
You know, it's become almost a culture. I see it on social media, friends, people, you know, they're wearing these, I won't name brands, but, you know, Superfly shoes that, you know, they didn't wear them for 2-3 races then.
Yeah, yeah.
Been in them and it's awful. It's like, it's become a bit of a throwaway culture. Yeah. When you're using it, that's terrible.
There's also a bit of a concern. If you have a very stiff shoe and it can't do that kind of flexible, I don't even just mean going for your gait cycle. I also mean kind of doing the twisting motion in your shoe. And the reason why that's so important is because if you're going to run over uneven terrain and there's just a little rock here, say it's like just on the outside of your foot for people listening on the podcast. And if your shoe is a stiff plate, your whole foot will kind of go over your ankle. And whilst what could have happened is that you just locally adapting your foot, all those little metatarsal bones will just shift to the side a little bit and you just ran over it. If you get that rock just underneath your foot at the wrong spot, you just twist over your ankle. So it's going to put lots of pressure on your ankle and your knee joints. And it won't be very, yeah, I mean, for me, rolling over my ankle is a bit of an issue as a Dutchie running in a Lake District.
But I wonder if the carbon plate maybe shoe for the trails at least has a place. I've never ran on American trails, but they say they're kind of buffed out trails easy. I wonder then maybe, yes, that there is a place for it, but definitely no. Even just where I was running yesterday was the kind of Horswath area. And, you know, it's not Grey Gable and all that, but my goodness me, yeah, I just couldn't imagine it. I spent more time 3 points of contact on my bum going where this carbon plate would come into play. I really don't know.
I suppose also biomechanically, you want to be going through the foot and the whole foot to be working in order for all that proprioception and for the calf, for all your posterior chain to be working at the same time as well up the leg. And if your foot is landing quite flat on the carbon plate all the time, that's going to have a reaction up the muscles as well, isn't it? Because they're not, the calf and the soleus are not going to be working in the same way, are they? Because the foot is going to be landing like that. So it's not going to be then going through. Can imagine, I would like to hear people's experience of running in a carbon trail shoe for a long distance. That could end up with other issues going on.
Yeah. And I also think like you're not actually landing flat and where the plate will help you. Like I land sometimes on my toes, sometimes on my heel, sometimes on my midfoot. It just varies on what kind of terrain.
Well, you're in. I also like climbing uphill with a carbon plate, and you want to be, that shoe is actually wanting to bend loads. You're literally going up like that. Like, I don't understand how the carbon plate would work. Anyway, it will be interesting to see how it translates this summer season in racing. The sort of trainers of choice.
I'm trying to think of any athletes to who wear that kind of shoe. I suppose any North Face athlete. Another question that comes up quite often in social media is how long a shoe would last. And with the previous guest that we've had on, I was surprised that they were quite open about, say, a couple of 100 miles or 300 miles or whatever. What would you say from the shoes that we've talked about to manage people's aspirations? Are we looking at kind of 300 to 400 miles, or does it totally depend on the terrain you run on?
I think it depends on the terrain, and it also depends on the runner. I mean, some, like, there's different bits where your shoe can wear out. It can either be, you know, your grip kind of goes quite, like your cleats wear down, therefore there's not a lot of grip on there anymore. You can then maybe use your shoes quite happily on some less muddy terrain. So just keep on using them. Other thing is, like, you know, people say my midsole's dead. That's what they often refer to. I think in most of our midsole materials, they last a really long time. We do some like lab aging and obviously a lot of wear testing. And I don't normally see this go first, but it depends. Again, it depends on the runner. It depends on the temperature you run in, funny enough.
Why does the temperature make a difference?
Usually I see that, like hotter temperatures, softer material, more compression. Then you obviously have the upper. Sometimes you get some holes in your upper. I would say patch them up. There's lots of little videos online nowadays. I think you can use some KT tape and some elastic glue. And that just makes your shoes last longer again.
Is it a conscious thing to make the whole shoe wear out at the same time? I do see quite often maybe the soles are fine, but somebody's, not your brand in particular, but just any brand, that the uppers kind of give way before the grip. Or do you design them to all wear out evenly?
To be honest, I just try and make everything last as long as I can.
Yeah.
And sometimes we're more successful on one part than we are on another part. And I like truly believe that if you love your shoes and they last you long, you're going to recommend them to your friends.
Yeah.
And that will help us with sales. What won't help us with sales is unhappy customers. So we just try and make everything last as long as we can, because it's better for the planet. If you can make your shoes last twice as long, that's half of the amount of carbon, half of the amount of materials, and half the amount of waste. It's just a simple equation, really. So like, we're really investing a lot into making our shoes as durable as you can, but you can help yourself as well by looking after your shoes properly, making sure that you rinse them out after a run,
especially if
they got boggy, because bog is acidic and the acidity kind of like eats away at the materials. Sand that goes and sits in between the mesh, that kind of grinds away at it like sandpaper.
Yeah.
So you can just get like a 2-liter bottle of water in your car and just rinse them off. Or if you get home, just under the tap, dry them away.
Never wash your trainers, Gary.
Yeah, I do. I wash the trainers more than I wash the car.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'm terrible because I have so many shoes.
Ever.
I'm like the worst person here.
But that's my next job after this Zoom call, is to wash 2 pairs of trainers.
Yeah. I stand in the river at the end of a run a lot. I find that quite easy.
That's
and don't dry them on the radiator or next to the fire. It's too hot.
Yeah.
It will kill the glue and it makes them all crunchy.
I've
done that, and my inner soles have gone all curly inside like a quaver. Mm. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Why did I do that for?
I've done it before, like in a like long distance, you know, run. And then in the evening, I'm trying to dry out my shoes.
Yeah.
So I'm going against all of my own advice. And then the insoles go up.
Yeah, we do that. Don't worry, we do that all the time on the podcast. Gary and I give out all this wisdom. And then we're like, oh, yeah, no, but we don't do that.
What is actually a good tip is take the insole out when you're drying, because otherwise sometimes the water goes and sits underneath the insole. So take the insole out and dry it separately, and it makes your shoes a lot less smelly as well. So it just
helps. Two things now. I didn't realize the bogs and the acidity wasn't great for your shoes, and now I'm going to take my insoles out. Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything about wearing your shoes, like for people that run every single day, or some people, crazy people that run twice a day, that they should rotate their shoes because the cushioning becomes slightly impacted after each run and you should leave it for 24 hours? Is there anything like that with Innovate trainers?
Yes, it is best after a run to leave it for 24 hours so that it kind of like, you have like compression within the run and then compression over time because you've done a lot of runs. So they've kind of showed that most of the like EVAPU mix, most midsole materials, they have kind of sort of like buffed up again after 24 hours. So it is always a good idea to rotate. And if you're kind of thinking, oh, my midsole could use a little bit of a boost, then go and get some boomerang footbeds from our website, because they really give your feet, like I've seen people use them again and again, moving them across shoes.
So with these are one we started putting in shoes about 2 years ago. You can see there's little beads on the bottom.
Okay.
So they're just like an inner.
And there's thousands of them. And what they do is basically, sorry, I'm not good for the podcast, but I've got my fingers. they compress, I put them there. They compress down all these thousands of beads that are on there, and then they spring back. like that. So every foot strike you get in that extra bounce and propulsion through this. Plus it's given an element of cushioning as well.
Yeah. And I don't ever see these compressed.
They are mega.
Do you take out the inner from your trainer and replace it with that? Or do you put it on?
Yeah, that's I any that don't have the boomerang footbed in, I am now switching out and putting it in.
Oh, so there we are. This one's got a boomerang.
Yeah. So you can use that in any shoe that you have if you want.
Okay, so I could use that. And then, so if I was running, I do often run twice a day. Yeah. So I would take that out and put a fresh one in for the second run if I only had one pair of trainers.
No, for this one, you can keep on using that. It's the trainer you need to rotate, and the insole, that can just keep going. It's fine. Okay.
Yeah.
I love it.
I will take that out to try now.
I was going to say the other thing when we were talking about you're talking about the durability and how long shoes should last. It's probably worth pointing out about our use of graphene, which we started in 2018. And the idea of that is that graphene is the world's strongest material. You know, it makes the outsoles much stronger, but without losing any of that grip quality that we're renowned for. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, your shoes won't wear down as quickly. So you're going to get that amazing grip for longer. Now, putting numbers on it is really, really difficult. You know, and in testing, we have different people running different distances. I remember the first pair we had, one of our testers was over 1,300 kilometers in his shoes, and he's still going. And, you know, so these shoes can last a hell of a long time, but I think you need to look after them as well. That is key, is what Bordeaux was saying. You have to self-care for your shoes. So many people, and I've been guilty in the past, of just not looking after shoes. And, you know, we all need to be more conscious of that. The use of graphene in the outsoles, and we also now use it in the midsole as well. So again, because it infuses all that strength and all that power that the graphene has in there to make it last longer, without losing any of the qualities of the foam. So the foam is really responsive, really bouncy, really, really nicely cushioned, but it will last longer. So many shoes out there in the market have an amazing foaming, but the more they compress, they lose their powers of ability so quickly.
Yeah. So like, and you realize if you buy a new pair and you're like, oh my God, I've been running on like cardboard, but they don't last very long.
We want people to have that amazing feeling in their shoes for longer. You know, if you've been, you know, you've done 300 miles in your shoes, don't be putting on a pair and going, oh God, these feel naff now. You want to be putting them on and thinking, wow, still feel great, these do, you know. Got that spring, got that, you know, feeling good. You want to go out for your run feeling like you're going to be bouncing. And that's
I wish I had that. I could buy that. If people are looking at investing in a pair of trainers, I think we should use the verb to invest in a pair of trainers rather than just to buy and use nowadays. So your new trainer, the Park Claw, what sort of price are we looking at for that? But it doesn't need to be exact.
For the new Park Claw G280, I think it's £160 at retail at the moment.
Okay.
I'm just checking on my phone because I'm not even going to hide the fact that I'm on the look.
No, I think that's lovely. Yeah.
That is 160. That is. I do know that.
That one's 125.
This is 125. This is
the pack. The cross channel ultra, which was Damien Hall's trainer of choice for the spine.
$125 for that one. So really, really good price point on that.
That's a pretty good price. Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, we really tried to get a shoe that was. It's not got the graphene that some of the other shoes have got. So obviously, when we use the graphene, that increases the price because it's a technology which comes at a cost, obviously, to us. Yeah. But what we've tried to do with that shoe is really make the Cross Talon Ultra is, you know, try and design a shoe that gives incredible performance and long-lasting performance, but at a price which, you know, is a little more favourable. I mean, do you want to say anything on that shoe?
No. Like, really, we've had a really strict design brief on that one where, like, give people everything they need and nothing that they don't.
Love it. That should be a motto for life.
Oh, yes.
Nothing that you don't.
Everything you need and nothing that you don't.
Yeah, I love that. That's good.
That's the opposite of our podcast, isn't it?
Gary. And the Trailfly Ultra, that was the other one that we've talked about.
Yeah,
We'll just let
My phone is going a little slower. I've actually picked up the first one this week. There's two trail fly sheets.
Yeah, there's two different ones. Yeah.
So, and is it purely just the name change for that, or is there any new innovation in the product?
It was just a name change to kind of bring it in line with the sort of ultra running family. It's still the same shoe. This one is currently selling at £145.
Okay.
Yeah. And which one is that one?
That is the Trailfly G270, and it's got graphene grip and Powerflow midsole, and it has the Boomerang footbed in there. Yeah.
That's the one with the zero drop. And the ultra one.
That's 170.
Yeah, but that has graphene grip, G-Fly midsole, and the Boomerang, and it's £170 at the moment.
Yeah,
awesome. I think that's something for everybody. You've got your road to trail, you've got your long stuff, you've got grippy stuff. Yeah, I think that's an awesome place to wrap it up. Unless you guys have anything else you want to share.
No, I mean, we could sit and talk all day, couldn't we, Bob?
Running,
we just love to talk about running. So, you know, as I noticed in the background there, I can see your Bob Graham certificate.
I wonder how that got in there.
Oh, awkward, Gary. Oh, no, embarrassing. Again.
I only know because I have one in my back of my shot when I'm doing Zoom calls from home. I have mine in as well.
Show off.
What trainer did you wear for your Bob Graham round?
Mine was 2016, so a little bit ago. So the trainers we've talked about here, a lot of them weren't in the range then. I actually wore, and I'll get it off the showroom raw.
Oh, he's got it signed.
Not in this. This is a new colour of it. So it's called Cross Talon 212. So it's a classic innovate shoe, which has been in the range for,
over 10 years.
Yeah, way over 10 years, probably more like 15 years. 8mm lugs on the bottom. What I would have done, I think if I was doing it again now, I think I might jump into the ultra shoe. Because what I had to do was I did the first two legs. So when I got all the way to Dunmail Race, and I had to switch out my shoes into a size bigger. So the same shoe, half a size bigger, because my toes were against the end. They'd swelled over the first two legs.
Yeah.
And they were just catching on the ends. So, you know, having that bigger size helped me. Whereas I think with the ultra shoe, because it's got a wider toe box, I could have probably just worn that throughout.
Which is huge, isn't it? Because it's asking a lot of people that are wanting to run like long distances, a lot of investment if you're then going to go, I'm going to have to buy another pair half a size bigger for halfway round. Whereas it really, your toe box, if it's big enough, it should, unless, you know, your feet, you do, you know, people's feet can swell massively. But if you have got a trainer in which you can stay the course in, and you sort of bedded your foot into anyway, and if it's comfortable, then you have to change. You don't really want, well, personally, I don't want to be changing.
I don't want to be changing. I don't even want to take my shoes off halfway through. I think what's important when you're buying, though, is that like in the midfoot and in the heel, it feels nice and tight. And then in the toe box, you get the space because that's where it's going to be.
You feel nothing, basically, don't you?
And you don't want
you don't want to feel anything.
Exactly. And you don't want to have a shoe that you're swimming in, like a size too big, because you would be moving around in your shoe. And that's why I'm saying the midfoot needs to like hold your foot well. And then the toe box kind of like nice and wide for the really long distance stuff. There is still like, obviously the sport of fell running.
That's what I was going to say. There's still a large place for shoes like this, you know, a more narrow fitting shoe like a Cross Talon 212, because, you know, I've grown up on, you know, 30 years of fell running, and you want a nice fit in the toe box that's quite tight, because you're contouring on fells and you're going side to side, and you don't want a toe box where it's too slippy. You want to feel, you know, you want the shoe almost like to feel like it wraps right tight right around your toes and around your feet. So for fell running,
I'd say that shoe on cross countries, when we do the cross countries in the northeast, you don't really do fells. Well, down in Yorkshire we can do, but cross country season, if it's not too muddy, you see a lot of that type of shoe.
Popular alternative to spikes, I guess, for cross country, just because it's got such fierce sort of rubber studs that like to dig in.
So what are you two got coming up then for this year? Have you got any big adventures, big runs planned?
You want to go? Well, you've just done the Lakes Traverse, haven't you?
I just done Lakes Traverse like 2 weekends ago, I kind of want to do a long distance trail in the Netherlands where I'm from, but I'm not sure if I can do the flatness.
Yeah.
It sounds really controversial, but like, I'm like, oh, it would just be, I would have to do so many miles and it's so flat. But yeah, I would love to go home and kind of run the coastline in the Netherlands.
Do they do, is the FKT spread to the Netherlands?
There has been some, but this specific path has none. So I call it an OKT, only known time.
Email and BuzzDoc. Is it actually, no, they've sold it, haven't they? FKT.com. It's changed to someone else now.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's, you can't believe how rapidly that has grown. That I know of quite a few, you know, we've got another exciting year planned with athletes and ambassadors. And I know they're like, it's really hard because they all like to keep it secret, so I can't say too much. But nope. Do you follow the dots on the maps?
Yeah, I love it. You
know, everyone is dot watching for like 2 to 3 days, watching people run across.
Fully invested in people running around paths.
What I think is awesome with you know, you see athletes and your ambassadors trying to get records. But for people like myself, you know, I'm never going to get a Bob Graham round.
Mary, you don't know. You don't know. Slicing the old dog yet.
But it's just opened up my eyes to doing these adventures. There's been loads of Wainwrights going on. James, just the other week, I think you got the worst week of weather possible.
Oh, poor James.
Honestly.
I know. I went hold this in the awkward, so the sunshine. Oh, James was running around in the blowing wind and rain.
Huge kudos, though. I loved that he carried on.
He didn't have to prove anything to anyone. He went round it, and we'd already been round it in winter to become the first person to do that. Yeah. So. Yeah, it was only 4 or 5 months since he went round it in winter to have another go. And he's a super strong and like mentally strong guy. And that's just such a huge part of a challenge like that. You know, you look at people like Paul Tierney and Sabrina, very, very strong physically and mentally. And I think you need that to do the Wainwrights. You know, it's an epic undertaking.
Especially when he's done it before. He knows exactly the task. And then when the weather he faced, he can't hide. You know, it's not like they often say with the marathon will always find you out. And he knows exactly what was ahead of him. But just him doing stuff like that, we've had a few guests on doing Wainwrights, obviously Steve Birkinshaw. Yeah. And it's just inspired me. I've got this mini project just to go and tick them off and just get me out in these new fells that I'd never been to before.
I've done them all as well. Yeah, I've lived in the lakes all my life, so... I actually got in trouble with some people because I collected them a long, long time ago, and I collected a little stone off the top of each one.
Ooh,
and exactly. But this was years ago, and I built a little cairn in my spare bedroom, the sad little man that I am. And I put a picture on Twitter, and this was a while ago, and I received quite a bit of abuse for it. And what I've said now is me and my wife, we've got our first little boy who's 3 years old now, and all the stones are labeled. So I'm going to take them back with him, and he's going to put them all back in exactly the same place where they came from. And so he's doing the Wainwrights at the same time. So it's a nice story.
Lovely story. Well, Lee, have you got anything planned this year?
I've entered quite a lot of, so I say I come from a background of fell running. My dad, my brother, my wife, mum, all fell runners. So I would try and get in some of the British and English Championship fell races. And there's some classic fell races, which I still have on my list to do. So things like, which one haven't I done? Oh, the Wasdale fell race, which is about 23 miles, I think, and takes in all the highest peaks around. Just really, although I love ultra running, I love trail running, I love all the razzmatazz, I go to UTMB every year, I love all that. There's a part of me that still loves low-key fell running where you pay £5, pay on the day, you just turn up, you run with your friends, you know, you are competitive.
Bit of banter. You're competitive
with yourself. You get back, you have a cup of tea and a pint and a bit of cake. And go home. There's still a bit of me that just loves that low-key element of things.
Have you raced the Old County Tops before?
Oh, I have done the Old County Tops. I did it in the year I did the Bob Graham, actually, so 2016. Yeah, I did it with a friend, and that's an amazing day out. I recommend that to anybody. And just getting to run with a partner and run with a friend around it, and you have to cajole each other around. It's and you're taking all those summits and the routes that you take, you're off paths, and it's just amazing.
I remember the climb out of Cockley Beck to Coniston. I'd never ever done that way up there before. And it was like, what the hell?
And then you went all the way out to Coniston Old Man to then come back on yourself. Like, oh.
Yeah, I just filled up on about 5 egg mayonnaise sandwiches at the checkpoint.
What about Three Peaks, Lee? Are you going for that this year?
I've not, no. Do you know what? I've never actually raced Three Peaks. It's not a type of runner I am. I love to have a good walk. I like to, yeah, it's a bit of a joke with my friends and stuff. They say I'm a good walker, not a runner. So Three Peaks is a very runnable route. You know, it's marathon distance. Mm. I know you're putting 3 big tops, but apart from, you know, the steep climb at Wernside, it's largely runnable. Big section between Penny Ghent and Wernside is, you know, fast running. It just doesn't really suit me. And maybe I'm just making up excuses here for not doing it. Because Innovate sponsored it. This year, though, it's actually on in 30th of April. So, yeah. And the field looks amazing. Yeah. I think it's a qualifier for the Great Britain team. And yeah, it's stacked, you know, some really top guys and ladies on the start line. So looking forward to watching that. It'd be a really good race.
Awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much. Thank you so much to both of you for giving up your time. Always learn.
Oh, I've learned stuff today.
I've learned so much stuff today. I've made notes. I'm going to wash my trainers.
Don't put them on the radiator.
So bad. I do it with the kids' ones too. And I'm like, why do they always fall apart? I want to wash. I'm going to dry. I'm going to take the insoles out. And I was a bit confused. I find all the names quite confusing and the numbers and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, I feel educated now. I feel much better to go and hopefully everybody else's. If people have questions and they're not sure still, what's their best way to find out more? Is it to try and pop in to see you? Have you got details on your webpage?
Yeah, there's various ways. Obviously, we're at retailers throughout the country. We have a page on our website, which you can find a retailer. So that's a good way to start. And we obviously have the shop in Staveley in the Lake District next door, which is staffed with Experience Innovate staff. So good place to come resource. And the website's got loads of information on it as well. We have a contact form on there, which will take you directly through to our customer service team there. Again, I think we've got 3-4 dedicated customer service people, all of whom are trail runners. So
send them some questions.
Yeah. And if they don't know, they always come to me. So. Yeah. It's a small business, you know, like we will try and help everyone who's trying to look for a pair of their perfect trainers.
Yep. Thank you so much. Good luck with future endeavors and with your new ranges this year. And we will be following. I think we've got a couple of Innovate athletes coming on this year. And so we'll be following their various adventures as well. So thank you so much. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for having us. Thank you. No worries. Okay. Take care. Thanks. Bye guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you so much, Innovate crew, for coming on the podcast. We learned we need to wash our trainers. We were both like, oh, we never wash our trainers. So
my shoe maintenance. If there's water there after a run, they get a rinse.
It's so dry here at the moment. My shoes are just like dusty. Like my hands, when I finished running yesterday, were just like covered in dust from just dust from the rocks. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. If you're looking for a really grippy, a shoe absolutely designed for Bob Graham's fell running, I find them not quite cushioned enough, but I love the grip on them. So definitely something for me for shorter runs. But you love them, don't you, Gary? You wear them.
Yeah, big long-term fan. The Terra Ultra, I think they're the Trail Fly now, the 260 or 270. I think Damien Hall kind of made them famous on his various FKTs that he did. They're a super good shoe, really. I think I've had 3 pairs of them. And anecdotally, because I'm a bit of a footwear geek, lots of Innovate footwear over at the Durham Dales at the weekend. Easily the most popular brand.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
Right, what's coming up?
Yeah, I got some. We've got a few. I thought I'd give a local event close to me called the Muddy Roads. They are taking over the Sedgefield Serpentine Trail Race this year, and it's September, and it starts and finishes at Sedgefield Cricket Club. So it's such a lovely venue. If it's a sunny day, there's a bar there. You can get some nice on draft San Miguel, and there's £80 prize. for the winners. So yeah, if you fancy that,
I'm going to be doing the prize giving.
Oh yeah, could be a go from the podcast dish. I think the event sponsors like to do all that. Head over to head over to www.muddyroads.co.uk and check them out if you fancy that. Run around Sedgefield in their local area. It's really good. And another race that I saw, Eddie's Revenge.
This is the passport office.
Yeah. And then it's a category A/S fell race, 323 metres of elevation, starting at Shaw Methodist Church, climbing to the tree point on Cropton Moor before descending to the quarries near Buckstone Road. Oh, 320. So that's pretty spicy for over here. That's good. And that's next, 29th of June. So Wednesday. Wow.
Oh, nice. Pop on over to Eddie's Revenge. Then we've got the Malvern down south, almost in Wales. Maybe it goes into Wales a bit. Midsummer Marathon. Oh, Saturday 25th. Well, this looks a good one. Yeah. 4,800 feet of ascent on tracks and pass, including all the Malvern Hills. Love the Malvern Hills. 26-mile route. You've got the Black Hill to End Hills. You've got Cradley, Oyster Hill, Ledbury. Gosh, it's everywhere. And the main ridge from British Camp. Oh yeah, there is, like, there's an old British Army camp, isn't there?
So
if you're looking for a really good one for a, well, that's your A race, but also if you're looking for some climbing.
Well, I've just looked at the elevation and distance. I should be doing this for my Lake 100 ratio.
You should be doing this one.
26 miles, 5,000 feet.
Bit of a drive for you, but probably worth the effort. So if you're anywhere around Southwest, it's a race for you. Right, what you got coming up, Gazza?
Wow. Oh, well, I think it must be a bit of a down week, actually. I've looked at the schedule on Garmin.
Where are we now? Are we...
6 weeks out. Just under 6 weeks, I suppose, now. So on my planner last week, it was... Because I just basically follow a half marathon plan. A marathon plan. And the workout, the long run for last week was to race a half marathon, see where you're at. So this week is a bit of a down week. So it's pretty much lots of easy running apart from Thursday, but Thursday's a big, I'm not really looking forward to Thursday. It's 15 minutes. It's the classic, you know, the 10 minutes and five times 1K and then 10 minutes. Well, this is basically replace the 10 minutes with 15 minutes. So that's a pretty wowzers. So if you say doing 4 minute Ks, there's 20 minutes and then you've got half an hour of the other exercise, you got 50 minutes of graft, which is
big. That's too big for me. I can only do about half an hour of grafting.
Go to the flats. I might go down to Hartlepool. If it's not windy, I might head down to the flats and just see what the legs are capable of.
Love it. 8 minute miles. See you.
Well, the trails are great, but you know, you can kind of hide behind the hills, can't you?
Oh, yeah, I've been doing that for years. You can go, this would be a 7 minute mile.
Well, maybe I'll come away feeling a bit more miserable about where I'm at. I don't know.
You're doing great. It's all good. So, different build up, maybe, but it's all good. Still running.
Yeah, you know what? This is it. I think if on average, I've averaged out easily over 10,000 feet a week, I've been really super consistent with my strength and conditioning. 80 miles a week, pretty much.
That's huge, Gary. Yeah. People will be like spitting on you in this podcast listening to this, going, he's whining.
You get greedy, don't you? You just always want a little bit more.
Well, that's what happens to both of us, isn't it? It's too greedy. I'm going to get really greedy this week because... Okay. Next week, the oldest secondary school finishes next week. What is it? 28th of June. Can you imagine that? Oh my God. Yeah. Then I've got him for 9 weeks. Love him. So I'm going to be a bit greedy this week. I'm going to do some more long runs. I'm going to get out on my bike. I'm just going to, I think the heat wave is good. I think this is the last day. It's definitely cloudy today. There's clouds. And I'm not going to, I mean, because like running is okay because you can temper your effort, but biking, oh my God, I thought my head was going to explode.
Oh wow.
Because you just can't get away from the heat. But I am going to be a bit greedy this week because from next week, that's it then. I've got the kids for 10 weeks, 10 weeks on the day. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that I have to look after my own children. Anyway, we have lots of fun stuff planned and it's actually super lovely here in the summer. Summer holidays are great. We've got these massive like alpine lakes. We've got outdoor pools, we've got the mountain bike trails. You never have to be like, what we're going to do today, because you can literally just go and sit somewhere. And
we have shopping trolleys now, a little bit of open water where we live. And I think Vauxhall Nova was in the River Weir when that was low the other day.
My kids will be delighted with that sort of thing.
New fridges,
trolley. So I'm going to keep going. I've got to get, I only did 2 gym sessions last week, Gary. I slacked a bit. So hard fitting in the gym. So I'm literally, when we finish this, I've got to get down there. I do find the gym less appealing in the summer. I'm like, finding that I'm like, you could go and run that beautiful alpine ridge.
Yeah.
Or you could go to a dungeon and squat weight where you're all by yourself and make inappropriate noises and like, oh, I want to go there, but I know. And anyway, so gotta keeping that. And the gym people are lovely. And I was like, what can I do in the summer? Because I've got the kids and that means that it's really tricky for me to get to the gym. And they're like, oh, I just bring them and they can just sit up, stick, you know, play outside. And there's a cafe upstairs. So I was like, you're going to regret that, but I'm going to so do that.
Bingo.
Bingo. Anyway, so nice to chat to you. That was episode 95. Thank you. Thank you for listening. We are a little short on 5-star reviews. Like, come on, guys. Come on, guys. Get up there. Like, share, subscribe. Thank you to CheerCharge for continuing to support the show, sending bars to guest competition winners and keeping us all fueled in our adventures and generally being a super all-round amazing company. Good luck to everybody training, especially if you're hurtling towards Lakeview 100 like Gary. I'm Eddie Sutton.
And I'm Gary Thwaites.
And let's run to the hills.